Welcome to season 6 of the Irish Baptist College podcast, Let's Talk. This season of the podcast is totally unscripted. What we have is a tub of questions, so if you're watching, you can see them. If you're listening, you can hear them. A tub of questions, unseen by all of our guests. And what we're going to do is just answer them on the fly. So we might not answer every question that we pick out of the tub. Matthew, who's recording for us, might find himself doing a whole lot of editing. But hopefully we'll be able to make our way through some of the questions. And today to help us with that is the principal designate, Dr. Jonathan McLaughlin. So good to see you, Johnny.
Good to be here, Debbie. Good to be with you.
I'm sure this is not the thing you would want to do first thing on a Monday morning, but...
The pot looks a little bit ominous. Debbie going, what is in the pot?
Good. I'm throwing you in at the deep end because we're just back first Monday after study week. You were doing some teaching on the master's program last week.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. Teaching on the life of John Calvin and his understanding of Christology. So highly recommend the master's program for anybody that's thinking of pushing themselves a little bit in the future.
Okay, great. And then you had a couple of days off.
I did. Well, I had a couple of days with the children inside. And then the sun shone on Sunday morning when half term was over. So I was lamenting a little bit about that. But no, it was great to actually just decompress for a little while.
Good. So good. And you're able to enjoy time with family then?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's get cracking these questions and see what comes out of the pot. So
it's like the FA Cup draw.
It's not quite as exciting as that, but we'll go for it anyway. Okay, if you could choose your final meal on earth, what would it be?
Oh, it would definitely be a Chinese meal, but a Northern Irish Chinese meal. Because Chinese, as you know, David, when you go around the world, you'll find, as you know, Chinese food is not the same all around the world. But a Northern Ireland Friday night local Chinese takeaway would be great.
And what meal would you go for?
I do like sweet chili chicken. With fried rice, and then a friend of mine told me to get salted chili chips, and I have to say the salted chili chips has changed my world. Okay. So I highly recommend get salted chili chips from a Northern Irish Chinese near.
So your time during the States, you weren't a fan of the Chinese on offer there?
I can give you one quick footnote on that. A friend of mine was a Chinese guy. He got married while I was there, so I was invited to the wedding, and we were going to like one of the best Chinese restaurants, but it was authentic Chinese food and it was a banquet. So there were 7 courses and I hardly ate anything. And I was so looking forward to it. I didn't eat anything all day, but each kind of round was like fish and fish eyes. And I just could not, even the fried rice had fish of something in it. So we actually had to go to McDonald's on the way home. So I hope my friends not listening to this.
Okay, great. I do really enjoy Chinese, but I think I'd have to go for steak and chips and peppered sauce. I think would be my final meal.
Sounds good.
The question doesn't ask us, what about dessert? Are you a big dessert guy or not really?
Not a huge dessert person, but probably a good banoffee. Okay. A good banoffee's hard to beat. My wife's banoffee's great. I'm biased, but good banoffee's good.
Good brownie points there, that's good.
Somebody could bring it into the college, you know, for us and the students, you know.
Well, if someone wants
three or four banoffees, you know.
Yeah, we'll definitely help.
Yeah.
Okay, I think you've stacked a deck because you've got another easy question here. Or maybe it's not easy. If you could go back in time, what would you do differently? Wow, big question. What would you do differently if you could go back in time?
It is in my own life or like world history?
I don't know. It sounds like you got big plans, Joey, for world history. I'm going to presume your own life, but I'm not really sure. The question doesn't stipulate, so you can take it any way you want.
I think just prioritizing people. I think the older I've got, you know, when I'm not saying I'm really old at the moment, but it's prioritizing people, whether it's ministry. Ministry is about people. Even when I was heavily involved in the sporting world, it's people that I probably spend a bit more time with. You know, even when you hear some professional athletes retire, particularly in the rugby and football world, they'll say, what's the thing you miss most? And they'll say the changing room, which is fascinating. So I think
probably when I was a bit younger and flying around at 100 million miles an hour, I just go, just spend a bit more time with people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good advice. Good advice. Can you give us some interesting insights into lecturers' chosen fields? I'm guessing that's why certain lecturers have decided to go in different ways. So,
sure.
You're coming in, you're teaching biblical theology, a little bit of homiletics, pastoral stuff as well.
Yeah.
What did you do your doctorate in, first of all, maybe?
So it was basically on Martin Luther once said, and Calvin probably argued this as well, that Romans 8 was probably the best chapter in the Bible. And I remember when somebody was giving me advice about embarking on to my dissertation, they said, look, you're going to write many thousands of words. You need to write about something you're passionate about. So in answering this question, why do lecturers end up doing what they're doing? I think you have to go, well, what am I passionate about? Romans 8 really reveals the life of the Holy Spirit and the work of the Christian in terms of sanctification, growing in grace, completing the spiritual journey. Because even at the end of Romans 8, you know, there's that golden chain of salvation. Those whom he calls, he also justifies. And those he justifies, he'll glorify. So I was really fascinated with the person and work of God, the Holy Spirit, in the life of the Christian becoming more like Jesus. So, and my favorite chapter in the Bible was Romans 8. So I kind of put those two together and wrote a long dissertation on that. So I think for anybody thinking about teaching or doing a long research degree, you need to write about something you're passionate about. Because as you know yourself, for sure, Davey, there's some dark nights of the soul when you're going either late nights or early mornings going, how am I going to get this done? And so ultimately, I think then that means that a faculty member, whether it's at IBC or another institution, finds their passion and then wants to not only write on what they're passionate about, but teach about what they're passionate about. Sure. So I think it's finding your passion is really important for any faculty member.
And which classes have you found most aligned with that patch? Because we all have to teach stuff that we're not, we kind of know is important and needs to be taught, but there's classes that really excite us that we get to teach. So.
Yeah. I think I really enjoy a principle that emerges from my classes that I go, whether it's teaching biblical theology or homiletics or pastoral studies, these classes are much more practically focused by what it says on the tin. But even when I'm teaching biblical theology, I'm always going, well, I want to spend 5 or 10 minutes of thinking, how does this apply to being part of the local church? And so that would be the principle that undergirds all my teaching and the passion that's there. But I think pastoral studies, where you're also looking at the men and women in the class going, you're preparing them to serve the church. And so that's where my heart probably burns hottest to go, what does this mean? And as we said here in 2024, to serve the church today. And so I think pastoral studies, it's a hard one between biblical theology and sort of pastoral studies and homiletics, but probably if you had to put a gun to my head, Davey, pastoral studies.
Okay, great. Okay, gear change here. Would you rather be attacked by 50 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck? 50 duck-sized horses or one horse-sized duck?
The 50...
duck-sized horses.
Yeah, because you just might be able to, I don't know, kick a few of them and run, or but the one beast, sounds a little bit more intimidating. But
Matthew's with us as well. Same question.
I agree.
Yeah.
Duck-sized horses.
Yeah. Duck-sized ducks are terrifying. Never mind a horse-sized duck.
Yeah, I just like
I don't want that coming at me. Okay. You'll be hoping for a few more.
These are
like
definitely
that.
Authentic from the listeners, do they?
These are authentic. Okay. For sure, yes. Okay, stay with me. This one's a wee bit longer. So, someone claims Spurgeon is recorded as saying, "He who knows the difference and always recollects it, the essential difference between law and grace, has grasped the marrow of divinity." What is the law and the gospel? How do the two relate to one another? And ultimately, what does Spurgeon mean in his quote?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to ascertain exactly what Spurgeon meant, but certainly lots of people ask, what is the difference or how do the law and gospel apply to one another? And I think the best two illustrations I think about law, gospel, or in a sense, indicative and imperative in the Christian faith, you took look at the Old Testament where the law was given in Exodus 20. You go, here are the 10 words that God gave to his people, the 10 laws. People go, well, was the Old Testament then more law-based and the New Testament more grace-based? But you go, when you study Exodus 20, it's after their redemption, they've been saved, after 400 years of bondage to a wicked slave master, God in his grace through the mediator Moses comes and frees them from their slavery. And I think it's in Exodus 20 verses 1 and 2, God says, speaks of his grace, and then he says, based on that grace, here's 10 words to live by. So the Lord Jesus, even in John 1, he came full of grace and truth. And so for me, when you think about how does law and grace apply, grace always comes first. It's by grace you've been saved through faith, and this is not of yourself, it's a gift of God. But then even at the end of Ephesians, that part in Ephesians 2, but you're created for good works. So I think we always lead with grace, but God has also given us gracious laws to live by. And so whether it was in Exodus, grace, here's 10 words to live by, Ephesians, here's my grace, chapters 1, 2, and 3, here's, in a sense, imperatives or laws to live by, 4, 5, and 6. So law is always marinating itself in grace, but without that grace, it's just a works-based righteousness. So I'm not sure what Spurgeon meant, having not studied what he said in that particular context, but for me, it's always grace-based obedience, but there's natural laws that emanate out of that.
Excellent. I think I agree wholeheartedly with you. So
it's not often we agree wholeheartedly.
But there you go. You know? Yeah, for sure. So our listener might not find out what Spurgeon meant, but you at least know what Dr. McLaughlin means. So that's good. That's good. How long does it take you to get ready in the mornings?
It's normally in the dark because, as you know, Davey, I absolutely loathe the traffic. So I try to beat the traffic early in the morning to get into college. So it's normally in the dark. So, I normally will have to check myself when I get into college to go. Am I actually, have I dressed myself appropriately? Because it's normally starting to brighten up by the time I get here. So probably in my morning routine, probably 15, 20 minutes. But I'm trying to get out to beat the traffic if I can.
That's a quick turnaround. It takes me at least 45, but I'm slow in the mornings, so it takes me, it's usually about midday before I get going. What are the theological pros and cons to using generative AI for sermon writing and preparation? So AI for sermon prep, chat, GPT.
Full disclosure, I have not used it yet. It's something that obviously, as at a college level, we've been thinking about how will it apply to the academic world. A sermon has got to come from you. It was John Broadus who originally said, it's God's truth coming through our personality. And then that was probably popularized by Martin Lloyd-Jones in his book, Preachers and Preaching, about it's God's truth coming through our personality. And if people who are preparing a sermon go straight to modern day tools, I think they bypass a lot of the work of God, the Holy Spirit, helping us to see wonderful things in God's law, which then excites us to then bring that to God's people. So I think some of the challenges, let's just take all modern day tools, whether they're extensive language tools or commentaries or AI or Google searches, if you heavily invest in those things very early in the process, I think you're diluting the excitement and the ability of God speaking to you through his word. So I would encourage people, if they're using, let's just take the principal tools in general, use them in the last third of your preparation, particularly when you're thinking about illustrations or quotations. Things like a Google search for quotes or AI to generate something in terms of, you know, looking for illustrations, I would just say stay well clear of any artificial tool for the first two thirds of the preparation of your sermon.
That's good. And I think that's the key point is the sermon has to come from you. You know, it's got to be your work. And I think some people push and say, well, like, you don't use AI for writing your sermon, but you can maybe use it for research purposes. Mm-hmm. But even that, you're relying on what AI has read and thought about rather than your own thought process and your own engagement with the text.
Yeah.
And you also prevent the text from changing you.
Absolutely.
If you work on it. Yeah. Okay, next question. This big question for you in your first year here, Johnny, but how do you go about finding new lecturers? Are there certain formal qualifications required for teaching university courses? For more occasional and part-time courses, what qualities, skills, knowledge, and or experience do you seek? Can you also comment on why women can be lecturers but not pastors? Are there any legal government issues with offering a job, which I assume is only open to professing Christians? My goodness, is someone asking for a job? I don't know.
Well, I think...
Do you want to tackle any of that, Johnny?
There's about three questions there, and I'll definitely take one of them in terms of the principle of finding new lecturers. I think in any form of Christian ministry, the first thing you're looking for any person is their character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this man or woman called of God to teach here at the Baptist College? And so their character, you can't bypass someone's character, whether it's in ministry here at the college or ministry in the local church. And then you look, the second thing I would say is their calling. Do they feel a sense of call to the work? Because to be involved in Christian work here at the college or in the church world, you know, we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers and principalities and power. So a deep sense of call. Now that call, there's a lot of debate today about the internal call and the external call and the council of elders. Whatever way one renders that, built on our character, I do think there's a sense of, am I called to this work? And then the third C, I'd probably say, is competency. You know, to teach at the Baptist College here, a person needs at least a master's or possibly further doctoral studies so that they themselves have immersed themselves in God's truth and in theological debate, and particularly whether they're in the Old Testament, the New Testament, they have an area of speciality so that when they're in the classroom and they're getting asked questions by students that they have thought at a deeper and more nuanced level. So character, calling, competency. And I think a fourth C is chemistry. You know, we work well here at the college and the staff team. We get along well together. Mm-hmm. There's a real sense of theological agreement, which not every theological institution is blessed by. And certainly you can go down through church history and sadly see institutions that did have a real synergy theologically and then faculty are hired and then there's faculty wars.
Yeah.
So who can teach at the Baptist College? Strong sense of character, calling, competency, any chemistry to work together.
Yeah, for sure. And just the press on that competency, it's not just academic ability, but then ministry experience as well. And you've talked about that already in your teaching. You know, you want to you want to be able to handle that academic material, but you also want to have some experience of ministry life to be able to apply that properly and be sensitive to how that's applied in different contexts.
Definitely.
Yeah. How's your history, Johnny? Next question. In France, are the effects of the revolution still felt to this day? I have no idea.
I have no idea either.
Maybe Dr. Dalrymple will know from her time in France. We'll hold that over for her at some point. Okay. What is the best thing about working at the college? That's not a planted question. That has arrived from someone, but
well, I haven't never been here, Davey, in non-term time. I've only seen it during term time. I think it's wonderful to hear the buzz of the students coming in. You know, that we are training men and women for gospel service, and if there are no students, there's no college. And so I think in my early days here, Davey, it's just wonderful to hear the buzz of the students coming in the mornings, coffee time, lunch time, in the classroom with them, hearing them teach, deliver different things. I think so far I'm just going, that's a real highlight that I think all of us as a staff enjoy to go. When the students are here, as much as we enjoy working together as faculty members,
yeah,
we're here for ultimately the church and preparing students to go to our churches. Yeah. So I think so far in my infancy here, as faculty members embracing the students that are
definitely. And certainly the best thing about working in college for me is being in the classroom with the students, mm-hmm. teaching, engaging with them, interacting, and just knowing that that's part of preparation for their service long term, yeah. hopefully beyond Absolutely. College elsewhere. Great privilege to be involved in that. Okay, this may be the last question. What's the best sermon you've ever heard? My goodness, what's the best sermon you've ever heard?
It's a difficult one to answer because there's two.
Could you want
to
say it was one of your own? No.
that is the worst process. You used to have to go, well, I have to listen to myself sometimes, and then now you have to watch yourself on occasion.
I know,
I think it was possibly a sermon by John Piper at a conference I was at on Isaiah 53. And it was a passage that many of our listeners will have heard read, particularly at the Lord's table, very often about Christ being our sin bearer, and even as Piper preached, the word "he" came out so often. You know, he bore our transgressions, he took upon himself our infirmities, and it was that whole side of the imputation of Christ bearing our sin and our guilt, you know, and then thinking about, you know, like who we were, you know, we all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us have gone to his or her own way, but the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. And I think as a young man in my early 20s, I knew I was a Christian, but I remember sitting there and even a few tears coming to my eyes, thinking about what Christ had done, you know, in my place condemned he stood. And it was as if God by his Spirit took up this familiar passage to me, and just in the moment of preaching, just even brought the gospel even closer to home. And I look back on that sermon as just having significant impact on my love for Christ.
Yeah, that's great. I really don't like these questions because I never have one thing. I always have like several of them. But I can think back to a sermon series Pastor Lindsay Allen did in Carrick on Romans, and Lindsay was in Carrick for a long time, so don't want to offend him, but that sermon series in Romans just was head and shoulders above everything else. I can remember just really stuck with me, just making the gospel live in a similar way to what you've described, Johnny. So great. That's a good note to finish on. So
I'm looking at that bucket full of
there's still a whole lot more questions left for people, that's a good note to finish on. So thank you, Johnny, for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you doing this on a Monday morning, and hopefully it'll be a wee while longer before force you to do another podcast. Thank you for listening. Great to have you join us. We hope that what you've heard today has been informative, encouraging, beneficial to you, and we trust that we'll see you again next time.